Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
I'm KC.
And I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What is going on, all my woods people? These leafless woods around here got me down, but you know what? It's A-okay because we are here today. Just sitting on this old blue couch, man.
Yeah, blue couch.
And it's just Tyler and I and his family. They're around. But it's just kind of like old times, man. We've been actually looking at some old-time videos around here. Today, we're going to talk about some deer hunting. But, you know, before we get to that, we're, like, looking at some hog footage from 2018, probably spring 2018, maybe, something like that.
And there's not any mean comments. It's weird.
That's just, it's kind of wild, isn't it?
There's a lot of comments, and not any of them are mean.
Yeah. But if y'all been around since the Public Land Chronicles days, then you know you appreciate it.
Whoa.
We actually, I think we went in and just deleted some of those old videos.
I hope we did, because some of them were like 2.5 minutes. It's like, man, we went out and hung a trail camera and saw a doe, and you can see the tail of it as it runs off, you know, and it's like, man, be cool if we had a video this month, so we made one and put it out. It's like,
I'll tell you,
I see why only 103 people watch that thing.
Man, YouTube strategy is something y'all don't really care to hear much about, but it is important.
It's tough.
Just so that we can have decent enough videos for people to watch, because if you put out too many bad things, then nobody wants to watch it.
No, they don't watch your channel either.
But this stuff is fun, man, and we're about to go do a little bit of it today,
yeah.
I think, on some private ground around here. We've got some bait piles out that we got some corn, pigs coming to corn on. We got some cameras on it kind of letting us know what's going on down there. And essentially, they're all coming at night. So we have to walk around and find them as opposed to hunting them over feeder. And if you're in a state where you don't bait, I guess it's probably something that's good for you to understand, is that just because there's bait around doesn't mean things just eat it. It ain't like a petting zoo where you just feed them. You know, it's a little more complicated than that. But it is nice to, especially whenever you're shooting pigs trying to eat some hog meat, it's nice to be able to kind of concentrate them and have an idea where they're at that way. I mean, it's just an efficient thing, right? It's an efficient thing to do,
Or
to make it more efficient at least.
I mean, and my main goal is to get some pork in the freezer because I got lots of deer meat, and I'm a variety guy, man. I like variety, so I need some pork. Plus, man, bacon's like the best thing in the world, and not that I'm going to get bacon, but bacon comes from porks. And porks can make things that are not quite bacon, but still about equally as tasty.
So. You know, I was watching a recipe the other day. I like to watch people cook, especially Emeril Lagasse. Big fan of that guy.
Big fan.
Bigger by the day. I was watching some, it wasn't him, but because I watch videos of him, I get fed other stuff too. You know, the algorithm, if you don't know, that's how it works. And somebody was making meatballs, and they were using like one third beef, one third pork, one third lamb. And I was like, you know, that's a thing people do in meatballs and like, not to say processed meat, but processed meat, meaning like mixtures of meat. People do this combination of different things. And I was like, you know, it might be pretty smart to go like half and half on pork and deer. You want to label it such because you got to cook pork all the way. All the way is a weird term. You got to cook pork over 160 to make it safe. But if you did that, you could make some real tasty stuff.
The USDA's lowered the temp on that stuff.
I don't
really
care about USDA. They want us to die anyway. So,
well, yeah, I mean, I guess you could say
they're
that.
They're depopulists.
I've cooked it to 145 and I've been fine. So.
Yeah. I mean, I've eaten some raw pork too.
I just feel like you would be all about that.
Probably.
Them lowering the temperature on that stuff. That seems like you would actually like that.
I just don't like them at all.
Yeah.
I used to work for them. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. They say that.
You just not like the people you work for?
That's right. They told us that pork was unsafe to eat whenever we kill them for a living.
Hmm.
How about that?
How about it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, there was a meat eater video that came out recently where they were talking about these fish that they were catching having some sort of like a reef-borne disease or something that was like coming through the plants they were eating on the reef. And not a disease, but like some sort of thing that it's like, you know, how fish get mercury buildup in them or whatever. It's like that, but it comes through what they eat. And you can, like, the older the fish is, the more it has potentially, and the more you consume, the more your chances of getting sick from that increase or whatever, too. And your friend Cal said, you know, just like anything wild, Cal.
Oh, Ryan Callahan?
Yeah.
Okay.
He said, just like anything wild, you know, eat at your own risk. And I was like, yeah, that's a good point. Like, I mean, and honestly, you know, also domesticated, right? Because you have to believe
should
somebody.
Just probably eat at
but
your own risk, right?
That's pretty much it. You know, like, I mean, you have to eat, right?
So I need to breathe at your own risk,
like,
too.
Might should just consider that, like, if you're going to, you can either eat stuff that's deemed safe by somebody, or you can eat something that you have a pretty good idea of. And it's safe because you have handled most of its process.
That's
you know,
exactly right. I like to be in control of whatever I can am allowed to be in control of. And by the way, the granting of my control is only done by one power, just FYI, the highest. And so, like, I don't really you get in this world with the canning a lot. Like, people, the USDA puts out all this canning stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, it used to be done a different way by people for forever who were pioneers, and you're telling me that can't do that anymore?
How do you find out, like, what, like, the pioneers, how do you find out, like, true information about what they were doing?
Probably Beggary's podcast, if I had to guess.
Golly.
How about that?
I guess you could. Where's he sourcing his info?
Clay gets his information about as good as he can from just people who've done
just
some stuff.
Just praise real hard?
Yeah, that's it. But
I just wonder, I'm like, because it is cool. Like you, could, but the thing is, like, just like when we started on YouTube, you know, we just made up whatever. Like, they could
this
just,
is a buck bed. I can tell because the way it is. Because
the way it is. Man, this is neat. It's Nietzsche. I think that, like, somebody could just get on there and be like, oh, this is how the pioneers did it.
Yeah.
So how do you trust them?
You don't, because my granddad used to always tell me, that's how the Indians did it, and that ain't how the Indians did it. You ever hear that? You ever hear old-timers say that?
I haven't, but I just talk about it when I talk about shooting deer.
Yeah, that's how the Indians did it. Yeah. It's like, really, how do you know that? But I think that there's a lot of literature from the colonization days of, like, you know, there's historical documents about Jamestown, and there's a lot of people were really into cookbooks from like the 1600s and 1700s. And then whenever you had the Western frontier in the U.S., a lot of illiterate people on the Western frontier at that point in time. So you kind of lost a lot of that stuff. So there's kind of a gap in there. So I don't know. I don't know a lot about that. I'd be interested to look up more about that. I'm really interested in food preservation. you know, my granddad and some of his family talk a lot about salt and pork, stuff like that. You know, they would, instead of cooking a hog, they would just literally have like 10 pounds of salt they would just pack on top of it, and it would preserve the ham.
Is salt something that'll ever, like, be in low supply?
I don't think so. I mean, there's certain types of salt that should be, I guess.
Himalayan, because those mountains are on the decline, right? That's no, right. Actually, I think the Himalayan mountains are growing. Yeah.
In about another billion years,
so there'll be so much pink salt, man, out there.
But I think that salt is
Scott
just
says another 40 billion. Yeah. Billion. Yeah, billion. 40 billion is what he says.
40 billion more years.
Yeah.
There's something, too, like certain types of salt, though. Like, there's the pink salt, not the Himalayan pink, but, like, there's this salt that has, like, potassium in it or something. I don't remember what it was. But that's the stuff you're supposed to use for meat preservation.
Oh, really?
Well, you can use the regular...
Dang, this is... I need to get Clay on this stuff. Because I'd actually listen to that podcast if they did
this. Yeah, I don't
know
if he's done this, but he might need to. He loves it when people tell him what he should do.
I guarantee you, dude. That's why he kept his messaging turned off.
That's it. But no, I think that here's the basic rule for the old knowledge that maybe we don't have anymore. Seek it out, and if it has anything to do with the government, this input, you just don't use it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of being serious.
Well,
like, they just...
Was the government ever for people?
Well, what's the Bible say?
Well, I don't know, but America was founded on principles that were built off of people who fought to get away from oppressive government. So I don't know. Like, that's my question is, like, was there a time when truly the founding fathers actually did care about people?
Maybe. I feel like we like to paint with a broad stroke on a lot of things. And I would imagine this is just me being just in my personal opinion. I don't know enough, right? But if you look at the Declaration of Independence and you look at the signatures on that, you will have the gamut of everything from just righteous people down to the low life scum on there, I would imagine. Because I know people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't get 10 guys together and there not be one that has a pretty bad character flaw, right? Or whatever. And everybody's
That's
got
why I hang out with Clay, because it makes us feel better about ourselves.
That's right.
Character flaws, man. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That's a good point, though. I was just wondering if, like, I'm not going to go into this rabbit hole, but I will just say
you took us there.
I think that, no, that's a different rabbit hole. I'm thinking of one that I don't need to go down, but, I feel like that as time goes on, things become more corrupt. I guess I would say that.
Yeah.
So I would say that, like, the same might apply to our government issues today, where maybe in 1776 or whatever.
The 4th of July, 1776, things were pretty good.
It was pretty pure.
And then it went downhill after that.
It's, you know, it's like a multiplication factor. It's an exponential factor, right? Like, the more corruption, the more corruption.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
George Washington refused the office of king whenever he.
Part of what I was thinking when I was asking that question was like, you know, maybe George, you know, was the guy who originally set this thing up, and then it just was corrupted by you know, Thomas Jefferson or whatever.
Yeah. See, and that's the thing is like all those guys, we don't know them personally, and I'm not a historian, so I don't know a ton about them. I've done an ample amount of research on the revolutionary time period because it's cool. But they're going to be, to use a meatier word, nuanced individuals, right? So, like, Thomas Jefferson is going to have some really good qualities. He's also going to have some really bad qualities, you know? And I think that one of the things you do get whenever you gather a like-minded group of individuals together is that those people, even in spite of all their flaws, can come together to develop something that is founded properly.
Well, each individual wants to bring their best to the table when it comes to that meeting, right? So
fellowship's good.
Yeah. They don't bring the worst to the table. They bring the best to the table.
Sometimes. You got to weed out the worst parts.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. No. I can promise you that didn't create the USDA in 1776. So,
no. Yeah.
If I had to guess, I would guess that's a FDR thing. But I don't know.
That's a good guess, yeah. about time Nation is.
I love memes. Did you know I love memes? Memes are great. Mm-hmm. This time of year is there's a lot of Elf on the Shelf stuff, yes. And so like one of the things that has developed from that is you've heard of Elf on the Shelf, but have you heard of, and they just show a picture of a thing, and one of them is Abraham Lincoln on a fire hydrant. Do you know what that is?
No.
It's tyrant on a hydrant. Have you ever heard of a tyrant on a hydrant? Which is kind of one of the things in some of the political circles now is to point out the bad side of Abraham Lincoln, which really? I kind of like. Yeah.
Really?
Got into it. It's a tyrant.
How come?
The war on Northern aggression, man.
Oh.
Yeah. He killed more Americans than anybody else.
Hmm. Thought he's honest.
Well, you know, it's interesting how you get name things, you know. Lying Hillary, honest Abe, right? they had to be right if you get labeled that way.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
But
dude.
There's another one I thought was real funny that was a little bit less controversial. I'm trying to remember what it was, but I can't.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah.
History's weird.
It is. I guess
that's kind of why I brought up the how do you know to trust what the pioneers were doing? Because It's like, man, even like things that seem like they're right and good. Like it's hard to fully, you know, mm-hmm. it's hard to fully figure out who was telling, you know, mm-hmm. was Trump telling the truth when he said that or not? You know what I mean? Like that's
her name's Lyon Hillary or not?
I mean, yeah, he's
telling the truth on that one.
I mean,
sure.
but there's people that would disagree with you, right?
Yeah, and probably. But I mean, he's been known to fib a little bit himself. So
sure,
yeah.
So that's the thing. I mean, that's obviously a weird. You know, way to put that into,
yep.
But I'm saying like, well, you know, did the pioneers, just use a bunch of salt because there's a big salt, you know, a lot of extra salt in the U.S. and they needed to sell or something like that.
Well,
you know,
the salt is the, you know, it demoistures things, mm-hmm. like takes the moisture out of it. And I think that's the whole thing. Cause moisture is where bacteria breeds.
Right.
So
it makes sense. I know it makes sense. I'm just saying like in history, there are things that like, you know, you gotta look at, so for
yeah.
Sure.
Well, I think the answer to all that is do what you think is best,
mm-hmm.
with the best guidance that you can find.
Mm-hmm. As long as it doesn't hurt anybody else.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And I think if you want to go back to the canning talk,
yeah, I would love to.
The thing to do is like can a bunch of stuff for the best guidelines you can, and then if it looks weird or smells weird, you don't want to eat it. Just don't eat it. Ain't hard. Or if it looks, a little questionable. I do it with meat all the time.
I do it with pizza in our hotel rooms all the time.
Just give it the smell test.
For sure.
If it smells bad, throw it away.
Hey, and that pizza looked good for a minute, too.
That's right. Pizza will stay good for a week on the counter.
Dude, is it the grease that, like, preserves it?
I think it's the glyphosate.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh. Glyphosate.
Glyphosate.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It probably is.
Mm-hmm.
Are you talking about on the bread, on the crust?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's in general, it's just the food we eat's bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How do you fix it?
Make your own. I think that decentralization is the key to all of this. So, and I'm not trying to even just go like full geopolitics on this. I mean, I just talking about like food chain in general. Like, you're better off getting some food. Even if you don't make it yourself, that you know where it came from. Mm. Like right now, in my family, we're buying flour from a flour mill that's down in the hill country of Texas, and you have to have some level of trust on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right?
But you know, essentially, I just know that they're milling the flour there, mm. and it's, you know, they're using wheat berries that are supposedly organic according to them,
mm.
which means no glyphosate. And
well, that's. And that's like I got a really cool cookbook for Christmas. Mm-hmm. It's from Baton Rouge area, or I guess really just the Delta down there. Like this lady is from that, and I could tell pretty early on in reading some of her stuff that she might lean a little different than me politically.
Mm-hmm.
But I also know that those types of people appreciate certain things about the food industry. It's the thing Steve was talking about when we were up there last February.
Oh, it's
February.
The horseshoe.
Yeah. It's like we're way different up here on top of the horseshoe, and then all of a sudden the horseshoe comes back together, and it's like, mm-hmm. we actually line up on some of these things, you know?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, and so she started talking about the same thing, like these different places in Louisiana that it, like, grow the rice and sell it. Mm-hmm. And same thing with the mills and the flour, you know, it's not bleached and all that stuff, you know. So I was like, oh, we're for sure getting some of this stuff.
And by the way, we're making pizza crust out of that stuff, bad to the bone.
Yeah, it tastes better.
Yeah. There's flavor to it.
There's flavor to it, man.
Bleached flour is literally the same. You could build brick mortar out of it. You know what I mean? Like, it's inert, you know? Like, you kill stuff with bleach.
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
That ain't good.
People.
Yeah.
You can kill some people with bleach if you eat enough of that.
Ew.
I feel like. Right?
I don't know, man.
It can't be good for you, can it?
I killed my pants in seventh grade with bleach.
Did you?
Yeah, you had to clean your own football pants and bleach them real good, you know?
Yeah.
We lived in an RV then, so I just bleached them in a cooler bucket outside.
Yeah. Yep.
Every Friday evening. Boy, it'd be like a half gallon of bleach. I had some real white pants.
Mm-hmm. I bet.
It's nice.
It's good, man. That bleach kills stuff for sure.
But yeah, I think that just knowing where your food comes from, and that's kind of like...
That's why we joined Meat Eater.
That's it, man. That's just because we're just meat eaters around
that's
here.
It, man.
We're thinking about doing Carnivore January. We're tossing around the idea.
Talking about you and my wife.
I think you're like a little less keen on it. But I would say we've been thinking about it.
Is there a cereal January?
No.
Because I want
my
that.
Wife somehow thought that I like cereal the other day. And it's like I do like it. But she was like, I've been thinking about. So here's this thing. We have pretty much 101% male listenership on the podcast. So we can talk about this. Mm-hmm. Right. There's this thing where women like to eat healthy. Mm-hmm. Or like to think that they do. And so they'll, like, try to find a replacement for the unhealthy thing they like. And it's like, that doesn't work. You just have to say, I'm not going to eat cereal anymore if you want to be healthy. You don't need to go try to find a healthy cereal. My wife is on this thing called Thrive Market. I don't know. Yeah. You probably heard something about it. Mm-hmm. It's just a good way for them to spend extra money on groceries that you didn't have to spend. Because you're going to go to the grocery store and spend the same amount either way.
Yeah.
And then they order some stuff off Thrive Market. It's like, oh, these are healthy gummies. Are you sure about that?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's good candy.
That's right.
Healthy candy. No, that's, I mean, yeah. And like you were saying, you just have to cut it out, right? Like, for the first time in weeks, when I had the choice, I didn't eat cereal last night.
Way to go, man.
Because it's time. It's time to lose weight. Like, I mean, I stepped on the scale the day after Christmas, and I was like, I got to cut 9 pounds is what I got to get to.
I got to cut 26.
That's a lot for me.
I weighed 226 today, and that's a lot. I mean, I'm 5'11 with shoes on. You know, I'm like a 5'10 and a quarter kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's just too much, especially because I have skinny legs. So my 226 is actually most people's 240. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
that's what I'm like. Dude, I'm looking at my legs going away, and I'm like, I can't wait.
I need to go do bleachers and stuff.
Yeah,
that's the thing. By the way, this is all something that I think people listening can kind of identify with because we're all kind of dealing with the same like post deer season, post holiday stuff that's going on. I still got holiday food in my fridge that we're making our way through, and I bought tamales at the tamale lady today. So.
Oh, baby. If you need to get rid of some of those, I mean.
Had to. But you're talking about needing to, like, cut some weight, which you don't have to cut near as much as I do. But, like, we got a lot of big stuff coming up in the next year and trying to get a head start on it. And we still have deer hunts going on.
Yeah.
So, like.
I may be hunting almost till February on deer, maybe even into February, depending on different weather patterns and stuff
like that. We've got to have a lot of weather if we're going to do that one.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
There's a lot of hunts still going on, and we're going to try to go chase axe. I mean, it just never stops.
Yeah.
When you love this stuff, it just never stops, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it is hard in the winter to kind of to lay off of food because it's getting cold and you just eat during the holidays. But
and honestly, like, I can eat less in deer season a lot of times because we're so busy, you know, and we're just like, it's just can't always just go grab a snack. We're sitting around here doing podcasts and stuff. It's like, I can just walk over there and grab something and it's not good.
You know, one place that we did actually have time for that was in West Texas.
Yeah.
Because this is cool though. I liked it, but I did snack more than what I usually have. We got a deer lease in West Texas. Y'all probably know a little bit something about this because we do a little public land deer hunting in Texas, but it's pretty terrible, actually. And so we were trying to secure a place that we could have some fun, maybe have a little bit slower paced, which that didn't happen because I just don't think we know what that means.
Well, I think a big part of that issue was not having a place to stay within 40 minutes of where our lease was. If we'd we were hunting some pretty remote stuff, so it's just kind of hard to.
If you want a nice place to stay, so here's what we did. A lot of y'all listening are probably sports fans. You might have watched some baseball this past fall. There's a Houston Astros pitcher named J.P. France. Mm-hmm. J.P. is a real good ball thrower, and he also likes hunting, like for real. Not like, I'm a guy, so I need to find something to do besides baseball in the offseason. Like, he lives and breathes it.
Oh,
like,
for
he's
sure.
texting me stuff about bows, and I'm like, dude, I don't know.
Well, and listen, you know, I ain't trying to diss too much, but a lot of them dudes go and just – shoot like a 276, inch buck in the off season. If you know, if you're following what I'm saying, and take a picture of it, and like, and I'm like, this guy like wants to do what we do.
Yeah,
he wants to go just shoot 105 inch deer on public land somewhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's the real. I mean, he's from the south shores of the Pontchartrain. You know, like he got them humble roots. You know, like he's like us. It's a little different.
He's probably eating a blue crab. Or two.
He knows who Emeril Agassi is for sure.
He probably shook hands with him before.
I guarantee. You know, it's funny. For a long time, I thought Emeril was from New York, and you talked about this with JP a little bit. Their accent sounds like
it is
a New Yorker.
It's a similar thing. I realized this when new strength coaches came in college, and I thought they were all New Yorkers, and turned out they're all from Louisiana.
So, I wonder if there's something to it where, you know, New Orleans is the second biggest port, or was for a long time the second biggest port in the U.S. So I wonder if it's that melting pot type thing that goes on in New York that also makes their language that way.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought for sure.
Which now I think L.A. has replaced it as number two, or Houston.
Houston probably up there.
I don't know. There's some big ports in the U.S. That's in general is the thing.
Well, L.A., though, with all
everything,
the Pacific.
Everything from Pacific. I mean, you think about all the stuff that comes from over there.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's kind of.
The Gulf's not the most accessible, I feel like.
No, but South America and Mexico send a lot of stuff up.
Yeah, sure.
Houston has, I don't know if y'all know this, but Dole, which is like half the fruit that you see. You don't realize how big Dole is, but it all comes in Houston.
Bob Dole's company?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. H. Ross Perot and Bob Dole kind of teamed up and made Dole. But I think, anyways, JP, Houston Astros baseball pitcher, came and hunted with us. And then Lay McClendon, we called him Lay now since he killed a deer. It's that actually is his name. It's hard to not say Lee because we thought it was Lee for a long time until I talked to him on the phone. He did Rut Fresh with us here a while back, and we're like, hey, man, you should come out. And he did. So it was cool. He's a social media comedian. That's what Lay's job is. And he's not just a comedian on social media.
No, it never stops.
Never stops. In fact, he struggles to have a serious conversation. But so I can identify with that a little bit, you know. But Lay, who also is from Louisiana, but kind of more central Louisiana, he's a different type of Cajun than JP is.
I've always heard them called North when they're from Alexandria.
Yeah, which is funny because it's on the southern half of the state, but it's still northern.
It's just like you got to be Baton Rouge or lower
You
know, a Cajun, I guess.
But they came out and hunted with us, and we kind of did the whole like camp host type thing. It wasn't like guided because there were no big deer around. But if there were big deer, you might call
it
guided.
And we didn't sit with them, you know.
No, but. We did some hunting, and they did some hunting, and we all kind of hung out and did camp. It was actually a lot of fun. But where I was going with this whole thing is we did a lot of cooking and eating on that trip, and we ate real good.
Thanks to you, dude.
Well, thanks, man.
You're such
I think
a good
you cooked
cook,
some
man.
Stuff too, man.
I don't know, maybe a thing or two. But
yeah, you'd have been helping me more, but it's a smaller kitchen.
Dude,
so.
I don't know. You're a better cook than me.
Nah,
so.
I don't think so.
I do, and there's some things that I can do pretty well, but like overall, dude, you just turn out better food.
Well, I just. You know, I'm just more womanly than you are. That's what it is.
Well, I haven't tested my testosterone or anything, but.
Well, I appreciate that. But it was a smaller kitchen, so really about only room for one person to work around in there. But we had a good time doing that. Lay still chose the Little Debbies over what I was making. But
yeah, he did. He did.
I think that's just the way he rolls.
Dang, Matt, what was that? Big soup you made. That was one of my favorite things.
Yeah, caldo de pollo.
I want to make that. In fact, it would be cool to shoot some pheasants.
Yeah.
And do that.
Yeah.
That would be the thing, man.
And it's a good whole bird application, too.
Yeah.
So you just gut a pheasant, throw them in there, and it's like what you'd do with dumplings, except it's just a different application, right? Yeah. Like anything you can use a whole bird in, especially in a soup, is good because you get so much more flavor from skin and bones and ligaments and all that stuff. It all melts down. But, yeah, you and I were the only ones that really liked that much, which I can tell
you
why.
Because of the little Debbie snackers up in there, dude.
And because there was vegetables in it, you know, and like, dude,
it's weird.
To me, it feels so good.
It's the best feeling.
Yeah.
When you eat food like that, you feel better.
Yeah. It's a stick to your rib kind of thing. You know?
I ain't just saying this. This ain't just like a hippie thing to say. This is real, man. You don't realize it till you get like probably in your 30s. But that's when you realize it.
It must be 34 because we've got some that are younger than that age that don't realize it. And then there's you and me that do realize
it. Yeah, it's crazy. Tyler and I are the same age. It's crazy how Eric's going to change next year.
That's right. I don't know if y'all know this, but Tyler and I are the same age right now, and it feels good,
man. It feels great, dude. Yeah. It feels great.
But, yeah.
I'm going backwards, actually.
Are you?
At this point, I feel
that's
that good.
Dude.
Yep.
You got that TRT going? Got you feeling right?
Yeah.
That's good.
I don't even know what that is. Sounds like what I was eating in that soup.
Yeah. It is a good soup. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of veggies and stuff in it.
Where'd you get that recipe?
TikTok.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. TikTok has got some stuff, man. I know some of you old folks are yelling right now, but
China,
they're getting your data. So they already got it, guys. Let me just let you know this. The U.S. government is just as dangerous as the Chinese government.
Hey,
so.
I'll let you know something else. Ain't nothing that you're going to find out about KC that's going to hurt him anyway. So it don't matter if China has your stuff. You know what I mean?
That's right. Like, they ain't going to know what that is.
You ain't got no money. You ain't got no, like, closet, you know, things going on. Like, it's just like, man.
They're
going
to be like, okay, how do we target this guy?
So my dad always says, he's like, I kind of like that, you know, ads come up when I talk about stuff because I ain't got nothing to hide. So.
That's right. You know? I actually get to see a Duck Dynasty ad from time to time, you know? Like, yeah, it works out pretty well. But we did that. We did a Mexican-inspired thing like 3 days in a row, and I didn't really realize it until the third day. And then it was like, oh, these guys probably aren't used to this.
It's just like, you know, if somebody from Bozeman was going to cook a bunch of food, it'd probably end up with no salt and pepper.
Yeah,
just be
bland potatoes.
3 days in a row. Yeah, so
that's right.
I mean, it's just what we are, man. You know,
it is, man. And people don't understand that.
No,
like we are white boys from Northeast Texas, but like the Mexican,
it's the best place. We've talked about
that's it. The Mexican food culture is something we live and breathe.
You got the Mexican. We also have like the stockyard thing going on.
Yeah, steaks.
And we also like we've got Cajun influence. Like we got crawfish close to home. You know
absolutely.
What I mean?
I mean, it ain't far to Shreveport at all from where we live.
Yeah. So it's like, man, we live in the best place to eat food.
We do.
Food,
and
pretty much.
I mean, the Gulf influence is also there, which is a little different than Cajun, where you just get fish.
Yeah.
And then there's just the, I don't know, it's probably the hillbilly type thing where you're eating squirrels and you're eating catfish and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, just
a
kind of
redneck thing.
Yeah, just a Appalachia kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Appalachia, then, as they say it. But
we don't forget the Hill Country Barbecue thing going on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's another big plus of where we live. Like, we're within a few hours of, like, some of the most primo types of food, man.
You know, I ate some primo food this past week.
Did you?
Is kind of a, we're going to kind of take a side trip here.
Yeah, I like it.
Real close to the border, you know.
Of Canada?
Yeah. That's where all the primo food is. Maple. Which
well,
I do like me some maple flavor.
Oh, I like it.
Maple syrup's the best. But there's this weird thing where some Mexican street food is like kind of junk food. You know what I'm talking about? Like sometimes the burritos aren't very good. And then there's like, they have this thing where they like open the chip bag and put stuff in there or whatever. I'm not really into that kind of stuff. But some places, though, they got it figured out. It's the place that you go and you kind of think you might need to order in Spanish instead of English.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you want to be.
Yeah.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meat eater. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
I had to do that on the way out to this hunt and that we're talking about right now. Not the hunt you're talking about, but the hunt in West Texas. You told me a place to stop, and I had to order.
Oh, yeah.
I had to use some Spanish.
Yeah, that old boy didn't know English.
No, not very well.
I asked him for a Mexican Coke, and he showed me a Jarritos, and I was like, no, that ain't what I'm talking about.
No. And that was some of – may have been the best pastor I've ever had.
It's good. I got the same thing.
I loved it.
We got it. I bet we got – we ordered 5 pastor burritos from that guy that day, didn't we?
Well, we were in different –
Yeah. My whole crew was 3 pastor burritos.
We ordered – I ordered tacos.
Oh, did you?
And I might have ordered twice because I like them so much.
You got more.
I know –
That'll happen with a taco plate.
I think I did that in Oklahoma, but it was a taco truck.
Yeah.
And I ordered a pastor plate. And I always get like a birria or something like that that's got like
burrito. I like it.
What?
You said burrito.
No, birria.
Oh, birria.
Yeah. And like something that's like beef. Because I want to make sure I'm not missing out. Mm-hmm. So I always get the pastor and like something like that.
Birria is not my favorite thing. I wish it was. But it kind of lacks in flavor.
It kind of does. It kind of does. But I'll get either that or like just some like a barbacoa or something like that, you know.
Barbacoa is real good.
Something that's beef and try it out. And I almost always am like, okay, the pastor was the thing. So if I ever come back, and then I never come back. But I went ahead and like, I was like, I'm real hungry. So I'm just going to go get 3 more tacos. And I got all pastor on that one. And it was really good.
I got a pastor burrito this past week that was not good. It was like just dried out, crunchy stuff. It's like they just didn't have the pastor thing down.
That hurts.
Yeah.
Especially close to the Canadian border
what
down
we doing?
There.
But... at a different place, I got, I don't remember what they call it. It's either guisada or guiso. They're kind of the same thing. Somebody can correct me on the differences, but it's essentially like stewed beef. It's usually kind of got like a little bit of a green chili type thing going on to it. That's one of my favorite things.
Oh, me too.
Dude, if I can
give me a plate of guisada with rice.
Oh, two guisada tacos and two al pastor tacos, and we're set.
Yeah.
Man, we were talking about food in West Texas, and we got just really way off.
Hey, I don't even care.
That's right. Okay.
Half y'all ain't even hunting anymore. Back,
yeah, that's right. You just need to know where the best tacos. I'm telling you, dude, like, somebody needs to make an app of just, like, rating taco trucks and Mexican food places. I mean,
remember we talked about during that series.
I think it'd be awesome.
Yeah.
We might should do it.
Oh, we for sure should do it.
Yeah.
If we have the time or budget, you know, that's up to Meat Eater, I guess.
That's right. Y'all tell them that we need to do a Mexican food series. Yeah. But we fed the Cajuns Mexican food for 3 days straight, and then they were complaining, so we had to do something different. But they didn't actually complain. I'm kidding. But there was some hunting involved.
Mm-hmm.
JP was an archery man, diehard archery man. I think he hunts ducks with a bow. I don't think he's anti-gun, I think, is what the problem is.
He is. He's anti-Second Amendment. And he also can tell you the FPS on every arrow ever made, out of his bow.
Yeah, so whenever he was in the minors, he worked at bow shops. It's like a thing. So, like, he knows his stuff. He's, like, done the work. It's not just like a nerd about it. You
I
know?
Can't wait till he joins Team Element and is our bow tech.
That's right. That'd be great. I would love for that to happen.
Me too.
And then Olay is more of a crossbow rifle type guy.
Yeah.
He likes to
little Debbie's, man.
He likes to kill them, man, you know, and it's good. He's a big old dude, too. He's 6'3", you know. Like,
yeah.
He said he used to could dunk.
He's solid.
Yeah. I'd like to see him and Eric play a little basketball.
Oh, dadgummit, we were supposed to do that.
Were we?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we're supposed to film that.
Well, I guess we got to have him back out to do some stuff.
I guess so, man. We might just have to go to Louisiana, go on a food tour and hang out with him and do a basketball deal.
We need to figure out some, like, what are those fusion restaurants? The Mexican-Cajun fusion restaurant would be a real cool thing.
Yeah. I bet there's some, Caribbean Cajun stuff down there.
Mm, probably kind of Creole Cajun.
Cajun.
Yeah.
Cajun.
Cajun type stuff. Yeah, that would be cool. But so Lay did some rifle hunting while we were there. And then you did some bird hunting.
I hunted some quail.
And then I did a little hunting with Open Sight 3030. And we'll kind of get into that here in a little bit. But that's kind of the plates are set, you know, at this point in time. You kind of see what's going on. We're doing the Texas thing. So we have some deer feeders. They're Moultrie Ranch Series feeders, real reliable. I like them a lot. They send them to us, you know, just so y'all know we have a relationship with them.
They hold a bunch of corn.
They do.
So you can fill them up and leave them for a long time.
We filled them up on October 14th, I think, and they were still throwing corn when we got there on December 8th. And I checked a feeder, and it was like a third full. So, and we were feeding. You have, like, speeds, and then you have time. So we were feeding on high for 10 seconds morning and evening. So I think it was throwing, like, probably 2 pounds of corn morning and evening. So a lot of corn. And it worked because there was deer around. There wasn't a lot of deer because it's a lease thing and there's other hunting pressure around that we were kind of figuring out. We're not going to focus on the negative side of it. But leasing's hard. I guess we could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people encounter this, especially Texans, right? Like, deer leases, I would venture that half the people I know that deer hunt spend some amount of money for access, which here we call leases.
Well, one thing we're figuring out, I think, is that a lot of the good properties get leased for like 10 or 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
They get like contracted, and a lot of times that's by companies. And that have a lot of money to do that with. And so you end up like it's this weird thing where like, how do you get on a lease? Well, you might be able to squeak in with a buddy who is on a lease with 10 other guys or whatever, and it'd be a good place. Or you might, you know, get a new lease with a couple of buddies, which is what we did and what a lot of people do. And then what you'll find out is a lot of times those places are not that good, which is why they were open when you decided to go looking for that lease. And they also got hunted in the late season by a bunch of guys who knew that they weren't coming back next year. And so they shot whatever they wanted pretty much. And so, you know, I guess you just kind of work through your network and hope to kind of work your way into a good lease at some point or with some buddies. But you may have to have a few negative experiences when you lease first, which is hard to do because they're expensive.
It is. It's kind of like dating, honestly, as weird as it sounds. Some people find a good one the first go around. Right, Joneses? And
I guess
then other people have to, you know,
she
spend a lot of money.
She to, wouldn't think that, but I do.
That's why we didn't give her a headset. but you know, it to make an analogy, it really is kind of like that. Like sometimes it's just gonna, you're just gonna have to go through a couple tough ones to find the right one, and we're still kind of trying that out a little bit.
Yeah.
But this was decent enough. I'm not just like super mad at it. There were some really nice deer around, and it made for some pretty good hunting because it wasn't just shooting fish in a barrel, you know. Mm-hmm. Like even though we had feeders on the place, you know, like I said earlier, like it doesn't just, it's not a guaranteed thing. It's good that the feeders are still there throwing corn and it works really good. However, there's all kinds of unforeseen circumstances, and here's another deal. It's like, man, them deer catch on because they know how to go into a food source. Mm-hmm. They know that they need to smell it before they go to it. So you hunt the same place a couple of days in a row, and all of a sudden it starts drying up quick.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a little bit of that start happening. Between that and JP yelling at deer whenever they don't give him a shot, you know, like you end up kind of having to get creative on some things and bounce around a little bit. So I do think that, like, a pre-hung set is real nice. And we had a little bit of that on this place.
For sure.
And we went in, actually, and just kind of, man, we did the thing that you love to do, and that's, you never got to go see that either. There's a cedar tree that we set up.
I didn't deer hunt one time on that place.
But you didn't go down there and look at that cedar tree, though, did you?
On the peninsula?
No, the one that JP hunted along the river.
Mm-mm.
It's like three cedar trunks that are all 20-foot tall trees, and they're about 3 foot apart.
Mm-hmm.
So a cameraman and a hunter can get on the inside. And, you know, cedar trees, they're going to grow their limbs out to the sun. So there's like a little hole in the middle in there.
That's cool.
Oh, it's bad to the bone.
I love hunting cedars. You and I have talked about it.
Yeah.
But a tripod, an 8 foot tripod in a cedar is like the coolest thing, dude.
Jumping jacks. I've never seen it done. I've heard you talk about it. But how are you getting that thing? Are you cutting the top out of the cedar tree?
Mm-mm. It's, you just lean it up in there and you got to pull on it and push on it, and it's kind of work to get it
so
in there.
So it kind of like eats the cedar tree.
Yeah, like it's just like all up in it. Usually, like you can get a couple like that, like two or three close together, mm-hmm. and kind of get into the middle of them a little bit. And it is just awesome, dude. I'm telling you, like the deadliest thing. It's what I used to do before I started filming hunts.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what we did most of the time, is we hunted tripods and cedars in Kansas and Texas. First deer I ever shot with a bow. No, second deer. Second deer I ever shot with a bow, or killed with a bow, was a buck. And it was a week after I killed my first buck with a bow. And it was in Texas in a cedar tree and a tripod.
Mm.
And, like, that's just the coolest, man. They just don't know. They have no clue.
Yeah. Well, they don't know how to see you, but they can still smell you.
Yeah,
I do think that there is a little something to cover scent. Cedars are strong smelling things, and I think there's something to it.
I think so too.
I'm not saying you can go and get away with anything, but I think it helps a little bit.
Yeah.
Well,
and like there's a chance there's a lot of scent being kept in that little mm-hmm. hole too, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, access, approach, and all that is different, you know, a different kind of
and
thing.
That's one of the things that JP, the bow hunter, had to deal with more than Lay, the rifle hunter, because Lay could sit back 100 yards from a spot mm-hmm. and have a much safer wind.
Dude. I like rifle hunting.
Yeah.
I'm fixing to go rifle a pig.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, there's a reason it's a 170 to kill a buck deer with a rifle, because we had a guy in Kansas that just chain smoked. I'm talking nonstop smoking cigarettes and killed like a 190. He killed all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'd been all over the world killing stuff, and mm-hmm. just, he knows how to play the wind, and he can sit back at 200 to 400 yards and shoot stuff.
Yeah.
And not be smelled, you know, mm-hmm. and not affect an area even, right?
Yeah.
Like if you can sit back at 300 or 400 yards and watch, learn about a deer for a day or two before you go in there and try to kill him at 200, man,
mm-hmm.
I mean, big advantage.
Yeah, for sure. So, well, that we started to see that play out a little bit where a couple hunts, you know, morning and evening in the same spot, there was a severe decline in deer encounters where JP was. So they kind of did a little moving around here and there. Lay was seeing some things. I think he was really wanting to shoot a buck. So he had does close and passed up on some stuff. And then they kind of did the shuffle. And about day three, I think it was, Lay got to sit. We had a wind shift, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
We took one wind shift to end up
hunting a different stand.
Hunting a different spot. so he ended up hunting. There was a preset deer stand, like a nice, like kind of a redneck blind type thing, but like better than that because it was the older ones that were made out of fiberglass, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of heavy. That was just still on the place from some previous people that hunted it. So him and Greg went up there and hunted that thing, and the bottom was rotten in it. So, like, they had chair legs that were going through the bottom of the stand and stuff. I did not tell them to get in it, but they decided to do it. I thought they should hunt from the ground. But that stand ended up being – how far was it? The feeder was in this wheat field on the far corner, but it's the opposite corner of the stand. Is it 300 or 200?
Well, his shot was 300. So the feeder was pretty close to that.
Yeah. Mm. So they're on opposite ends of a 5-acre wheat field that's kind of got a little wheat in it. There's deer in it and doing stuff. But a nice buck came out to the feeder and just did the thing. And Olay just took his Kentucky windage.
Olay.
Yeah, Olay. And, you know, licked the end of his sight and kind of just – ranged it all out.
I heard Greg was looking at ballistics charts.
He did. He was shooting a 270, so that always helps. Yeah. Pretty flat, you know. Mm-hmm. And he dadgum smoked a nice 8-point at 300 yards first shot. And then put a couple more finishers on him that weren't as finishing.
No. It's a good way to keep him from running.
That's right. It took his running gear out from underneath him. But his first shot smoked him like heart shot. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty awesome. I mean, yeah. Longest shot he'd ever made on a deer. And I was impressed, man. Old Louisiana boys can shoot.
They can, man.
Yeah. And then
proof is JP killed a turkey.
Yeah. JP shot him a turkey with a bow.
Smoked
it. And I'm not going to tell you what kind of broadhead it was because I think he is a fan of them. But he's got this broadhead that it's got a weird plunger system that the blades deploy. It's a mechanical. The blades deploy when they hit things from, like, pressure on the tip. Well, we shot this turkey with this thing. And I think turkeys are too soft because we went to examining the dead turkey, and it just had a hole through it.
Like a bullet point.
Like a bullet, like a field point. So I don't think it worked on the turkey. But apparently he smoked it good enough that the turkey fell over, like, 15 yards from where he shot it. And then he said he got to see the show of the turkeys wearing out the other turkey.
Weird.
They were smoking her.
I don't like turkeys, dude.
Dude, I love turkeys.
They're weird. They're tasty, but they're weird, dude.
They're just, dude, I don't know. They're a lot dumber than ducks, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you look at a duck messing around, and they kind of look like they're smart, like they got some personality or something. I think turkeys are literally just an instinctive, reactive creature. Mm. Like they're,
a chicken.
It's strange. It's almost like they're not alive. Yeah. You know, they're just like doing a thing that they have to do to survive.
Yeah.
They're a very weird animal.
They are.
But they can see real good.
Dude, I don't know how he got drawn, man.
No, man, I don't either.
I think it saw him draw, I think he said. But
well, if they're like 12 yards off when that happens, then if you're pretty quick on the draw, then you can get them down.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of laying them down went to happening out there, man.
Yeah, there's another laying them down story. That happened, and because they shot, and we were also letting Michael do some hunting since he hadn't got to do a whole lot. He hadn't killed a deer in the last 2 years, or, you know, last year hunting with us, or this year.
Yeah, I bet your whitetail bums is going to have a little bit of that on there the next time that comes out.
Maybe, I don't know
if it ever does.
Well, yeah, we'll see. But yeah, so Michael ended up shooting a deer. And I'll let him tell the story on whitetail bums if he hadn't already. But so we won't tell much about it. But he ended up shooting a deer too. So that happened. And then because everybody was kind of shooting stuff, we let them choose on the last evening. We let them choose. It's supposed to rain real hard the next day. So we were like, hey, everybody's like, let's just go home because we've been here 5 days or whatever.
Which is a good call because it rained bad.
So the last evening, Lay and JP chose their stands in case he was like, hey, you mind if I go over there where y'all aren't going, hunt that other place? Well, yeah, sure. That's fine. So
I tried to talk JP into going there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, no, I'm going to go back.
And he'll give you grief, too. He's like, oh, yeah, y'all went on a doe hunt or whatever, you know. It's like, okay, dude, you had a chance. No, but he they were cool with us going over there. So I almost stayed and quartered up Lay's deer for him. And I decided,
what a nice guy you are.
I decided, y'all talked me into it. But I decided, I was like, you know what, man, I'm tired. I'm just going to go hang out with these two dudes. I ain't got to hunt KC that much and this year. So I'm just going to go be the photographer.
Yeah. Behind the scenes a little bit. We kind of need some still imagery content for some camo stuff.
Yeah. So I'm like, I'm just going to go.
Podcast brought to you by First Light Gear. We're supposed to say it at the beginning. Oh, sorry, guys.
Well, we'll bring it by somebody else at some point. But anyway, so I was like, I love taking pictures, and I'm just going to follow behind with a camera. So we get out of the trucks, kind of get all my stuff ready, and we're just going to go on a doe hunt with an open sight 30-30. And basically, I won't tell the whole story because it's KC's story, but I start snapping. I get into photographer mode, and we walk like 120 yards, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, you think we should rattle right here? And I, like, woke up. You know, I was like, I've been in photographer mode. I was like,
you were like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I started looking around. I'm like, man, there's some pretty good cover over there on the side of the river. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah, this looks good, you know, whatever. So I kind of give you the, like, yeah, I think it's a pretty good idea. And then I suggest, do you want me to back off and rattle? And you're like, yeah, go over the bottom of those cedars. So I think it was a dead plum tree, and pulled over to me, and I'm like tucked in these cedars, and I start rattling, and I'm stomping on that plum tree, trying to make just a ruckus, right? It's pretty, mm-hmm. pretty quiet.
You're pretty, pretty good at rattling.
I've learned.
Yes. Thanks, I learned some stuff about rattling from you. Cause I remember you talked about this for a long time. Like the way they actually sound is different. A lot more tines to it, a lot less clashing mm-hmm. than what people think there is. And it's a lot more, there's a lot more consistent sound mm-hmm. when deer are fighting. A lot of people go, you know, and it's really, and that's what you did. You were like, just constantly just antlers.
It's just hard to do with your rattling horns because there ain't many tines on them.
No, there's not. Those horns, they're not really made for Texas. They are Kansas antlers.
Mm-hmm.
And in Kansas, a lot of times you're rattling at deer at 300 or 400 yards away, mm-hmm. and you're trying to make just them hear something. And you can get some real good pack. Just mm-hmm. real high pitched sharp sound out of those things.
Yep.
They work real good up there. But mm-hmm. you're right. Yeah. One side's like got a brow tine and a fork.
Yeah, you gotta work hard to get tine noise out of the things, you know.
Yeah,
and so I did at first. I was like, okay, I gotta step my game up a little bit here and do this differently. But I was thinking about it, and I was kind of looking down at them, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'd been doing it for like 40 seconds, and all of a sudden, I see you like square up a little bit and get your gun like in both hands.
You can tell I'm serious.
And then I see a flash. It was a little buck, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And see, the way I was set up is I had a big cedar tree. And I could see part of the river and you guys, and the wind was blowing like to where I was kind of downwind of y'all, but not exactly. Like mm-hmm. if you look at the wind, like as if it was going up the river, or I guess up the river. Yeah. I was kind of downwind. So, Buck, are you cool with me telling this?
Yeah, you're way better than I am.
I'll just tell you my perspective up until a certain point.
So let me interject here and then you go again. The reason why Tyler saw me do that is because I saw a thing. Everything's gray this time of year,
mm-hmm.
including the deer. I saw a thing across the river that very well could have been a cottonwood stump. The deer look a lot like cottonwood stumps at about 100 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't have big antlers, so I couldn't tell for sure. So I kind of like did a thing, and I was trying to like get down to put my gun on my boot so I could get my binos up to look at it. Well, then it moved, and I was like, okay, it's a buck. But then right away, I saw it was like a forky or mm-hmm. something. I can't really remember what he was because it got more intense.
Yeah.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meateater.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
But then also, in a rattling situation, multiple deer can show up. So it's like, okay, I don't want to have to be moving around too much if a deer that I do want to shoot comes in. I don't have a finger on the trigger or anything, right? But I got the hammer back on that 30-30, and I'm just kind of ready. I'm not bearing down on that deer, pointing at him or anything, but I just got my gun up ready to go.
Yeah, it's just like, I see you, like, see a buck, and like, oh, here's something happening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the buck starts to go, he's going to go try to get the wind of this rattling stuff that's happening in these cedar trees. So, I had stopped rattling once I saw him running towards us. And so he runs up the river, and I keep waiting on the like sound of like him crossing the river. I never hear it. This all happens pretty quick. It sounds like it takes a while, but it doesn't. And I never hear him cross the river or anything. And about that time, as I'm thinking, like, man, I don't know. I guess he's not coming across the river. He's just going to go up the river until he gets our scent. All of a sudden, I look back at you guys, and behind y'all, I see another flash of a deer. And y'all are still looking at the little buck. And I'm like, all of a sudden, just big rack comes out. And I'm like losing it because I'm like, they're going to shoot this little thing over here. And this guy's going to be like, he's going to pop out. Yeah, because we're like 20 yards apart, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's no way for me to say anything. So I start, I see it's a big buck. He starts running kind of the same path that little buck is. And he starts going, like, he's going to go up the river trying to get our scent. So I'm like, I got to get him to come towards us. So I start rattling again. When I do that, he, like, angles towards us. And about that time, you look over and see him. And it was like, okay, we're good. He's locked in. You know, at least we stand a chance now. And
I moved my finger to the trigger area on the gun at that point.
He disappears behind my cedar tree. So now it's all auditory for me. So you're going to have to explain what happened.
So I see the deer and he's like coming right into the rattling. He's locked in on where Tyler is behind me. We don't exist to him, which is awesome because we don't have a super amount of cover. We're gun hunting, so you don't have to have a ton of cover, right? Yeah. And then here's the thing: this is why guns and crossbows are way easier than a regular bow, right? I like shooting it all, whatever. Cause I shot a deer with a gun right here, but this is point blank. This is a fact. The amount of movement that you have to do to pull off a shot with either one of those weapons is drastically different than a regular compound vertical bow.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I have my gun up, and that's it. That's all I have to do.
Well, and another thing, it's not quite this way with crossbows. There's some that'll shoot like 500 feet per second, so it's a very flat arrow, right? But with there's another step to the vertical bow thing, which is ranging.
Yes.
That you didn't have to do.
They didn't have
to
think about that one iota.
Yep.
The deer, as soon as we see him, is in range. Mm-hmm. And so he's coming straight in. I'm like, real excited all of a sudden. I'm not shaky. I do a thing where, like, I don't get buck fever in the moment of truth. If I have to wait too long, I get kind of shaky. But then as soon as it, like, comes down the nitty-gritty, I'm fine. And then right after everything happens, I'll lose it sometimes, right? But, like, this deer's coming in. I'm just zoned in, locked in. Like, I'm going to kill him. And he then, like, kind of interacts with that little deer. He kind of stops and looks at that little deer. He's not, like, startled, but he's just, like, trying to decide what's going on because he's a boss. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why he's running in as confidently as he is. And he's just ready to come in there and whoop somebody. And then instead of following the path that little deer does, he bails off in the river and just goes to splashing and just runs right across the river.
From my point of view, because I couldn't see him, I was waiting on that sound. Mm-hmm. And when I heard it, that was when I was like, I can't believe we're fixing it.
He's about to get smoked. And I'm going to be honest, I'm less confident with that gun than I am with my bow because I don't shoot a gun a whole lot.
Well, talk about what gun it is.
It's my dad's Winchester Model 94 30-30. It's one that he's had for a very long time. I think it was a birthday gift probably when he was like 12 or 13. He's killed a lot of deer in the hill country with it. It was given to him by my grandparents, my grandma, my granddad. And the first deer I ever saw get killed was killed with that gun. They have a lot of memorable bucks going down. So in Texas, Houston, East Texas, you can shoot whatever buck you wanted to. Mm-hmm. I remember one time he shot a 2.5-year-old. Him and I were set up on this 2-track kind of down in the woods. And this buck came by falling a doe like 10 yards. He shot it 5 times before it fell over. And they were all kill shots pretty much.
Whoa.
My dad can just there's a show on back in the day called The Rifleman where the guy shot a lever action, you know, and that was probably a 44-40. But still, that gun was real popular with my dad's age group. And it's almost like the AR of their time because it had high capacity and you could just really shoot fast, right?
It's open sight too.
Yeah, open sight. Yeah. Old school, just metal sights. There's no color on them or anything.
You want to talk about feeling like a pioneer?
Oh, you feel cool.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Down cowboys out there in Texas on a river just.
That's right, man.
Iron sight.
I had all brown on too. I didn't even have like camo really, you know? So it was cool. So
probably had an imaginary cowboy hat on too.
I should have. I wish I had. I used to. I had a camo cowboy looking hat one time.
Shocky style.
Yeah, it was cool, man. I liked it. I wish I still had that. I might need to get a hold of one of those.
Yeah.
But anyway, so. I'm not super confident with this gun. For one, it's not an easy gun to shoot, especially at range. I've practiced with it some. You know, I didn't carry it out there without practicing. But there's a weird thing where I had a backpack on, and I should have taken it off for the shot. And I don't think I did. Did I?
I don't
Maybe
remember.
Maybe I did. I can't remember. I don't think I did, though. But shouldering the rifle is a little weird with the backpack on. So I had to kind of work through that a little bit. But the deer comes down in the river, splashing around, stops in the middle of the river on a sandbar, and looks right in your direction. He's not even looking at us. And I don't know how far it is. It doesn't matter, you know. But it's probably like 40 yards. I put it right on his front shoulder. I'm trying to drop him right there. I'm like, I got a rifle. Mm-hmm. It's about to be sick. Fire a shot. Boom! You know, and like none of us are used to the sound of a rifle going off. Yep. So it was startling to everyone, I'm sure. It was a quiet night, you know. And I'm very sure I hit him, but I don't know because he doesn't drop. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm a little freaking out. But, I mean, he was close enough that I have to really mess up to miss him, you know.
Dude, you're better probably at shooting that than me. But I shot my 30-30 at 50 in November a couple times. Mm-hmm. And, dude, I was not good with it. I mean, all of them would have killed a deer.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, I also was shooting at a box, not a deer, so not nervous or anything. And I do get a little bit of buck fever, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I just feel like I was like at the point where like if it was more than 50, which we talked about this too. You talked about potentially like lathing the front dot on that down on mine. Like we decided that maybe potentially at least that my front dot in the iron sights is like big, so it's kind of like. we talk about with 010 pins versus 019s. Mm-hmm. Like, you and I want to shoot the 010s because our eyesight's still pretty good. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we got no problem seeing those, and it makes for a smaller margin of error, yeah, technically.
And they're also, I mean, 30-30s are made to shoot that range, though, too. Mm-hmm. You're not made, I mean, we've talked about it for a long time, and it's one of the reasons we're interested in shooting some 30-30s because you're just supposed to shoot them at kind of archery ranges, but it's just a more done deal. Mm-hmm. And so it was nice. But I'd practiced before we went, and I was holding them about an inch at 50, and that's, you know, off the shoulder, which is not sub-MOA, but we're also not shooting through a scope at 400 yards either. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you're holding them in there good enough to kill one. And I didn't hit him where I was aiming. I ended up, the deer runs up on the hill or runs up on the bank. I'm not as good. I need to practice some with the follow-up shots.
Yeah.
Because I racked a shell out, but I think you have to hit the back wall on the lever, mm-hmm, to make the firing pin activate. Because, mm-hmm, I put another shell in there, and then it wouldn't fire. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that was. I need to kind of figure that out. But because I was trying to do a follow-up shot, and I didn't get it done, and then he ran up about 100 yards, and I saw him kind of getting a little weird, and I was like, oh, he's hit.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of went sideways. Anytime deer do like a 90-degree angle thing, they don't do 90s very often, you yeah, know? Like, it ain't a thing they do normally. He does like a 90, his tail's wiggling, and he's still moving pretty quick, and then he stops, and then he does like the whole, like, spread his front legs out a little bit and kind of get wiggly,
mm-hmm,
and then just lays down right there. And then it was like, ah! Dude, he did it!
We lost our minds, dude.
It felt like more of an accomplishment than any bow kill that I've had recently.
It was potentially the coolest thing, the coolest
hunt. It was sick. I wish you could have seen the actual thing go down, but I'm sure it was just really cool.
Here's the thing, guys, is that I got to see it because the footage is primo.
It is bad to the bone. I want to watch it right now. Wish we had it.
Slow motion, in the river. Like, yeah. Oh,
it is Nat Geo, but with dead things.
Michael absolutely just nailed it, dude.
Yeah.
Michael's done a great job this year. Even though it took him a couple of years to kill a deer for the element, he has done a good job on the camera this year, man.
Man, well, you know, we don't hire him to kill stuff. We hire him to get good footage, and he did. I mean, he filmed two deer that I shot this year, and they are bad at the bone. Mm-hmm. The South Dakota that's on the YouTube channel, and then this will be on the Meat Eater video that'll come out next year.
Did Michael film me shoot a deer this year?
Yeah, he filmed South Dakota for you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then also a Texas public land deer, too. Forgot about that one.
Sure
yep.
enough.
Yep.
Yep. That's on the YouTube channel.
Yep. And both of those are
South
really
Dakota
good job,
is on,
too.
The Meteor channel, if y'all haven't seen that. We'll put that stuff in the link to that in the comment. Or what's it called? Description.
Description, yeah.
But, yeah, so then we have just an emotional night of just excitement. And then I'll try to get through this. But my granddad passed away today, mm-hmm, actually. So it meant a lot to me to just kind of culminate that whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, the reason I hunt is because he somehow, post-depression era, decided he wanted to do some hunting, mm-hmm, and then taught my dad to do it. And, you know, we've been on countless deer hunting trips where that gun was the gun that deer got killed with, and I got to kill one with him, and then got to go tell him the story about it. So it's
pretty
cool.
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, guys, I told several people this, but I won't go into too many details, but the post-kill interview that you have seen on TV and everywhere else for decades now that people do after they shoot a deer was the single best one I've ever seen. It was the best one. I mean, bar none, the best one that I have ever seen. And I've watched so many hunting shows, you can't even imagine. That's all I did for years and years and years, watch TV hunting, you know? And then have watched a lot of YouTube since, you know, and we're sitting there and I'm still the photographer. So we kind of get this buck, you know, back where we want him on, you know, by the river and everything. And I'm taking pictures and Michael's video, and it's just epic, dude. Like, the clouds are doing this thing where they just show detail, and there's these bluffs on the river, and Casey's just kind of taking it all in. And I'm taking pictures, and then he starts in on his interview, and like 30 seconds in, I'm like locked in. I stopped taking pictures, turned the camera off, I'm listening. And by the end of it, dude, the three of us were pouring tears out of our faces, man. Yeah. It was such a good, good speech, man. And
thanks, man.
I really, like, you don't understand how glad I am I was not quartering Lay's deer at that point.
I'm glad you weren't either. I'm thankful you went with us because, I mean, I probably could have rattled the deer in by myself, but I was a lot more glad that you were there to do it and yeah. share it with, man. It was cool.
Yeah.
You and I have talked about doing the gun thing some together for a long time. And it probably all started when we were belly crawling around in Kansas about 6 or 7 years ago. And we had deer 40 yards and couldn't get them killed.
Dude, for years we've been like, oh, how many deer could we have killed with a rifle this year, you know?
And sure enough, it works, and it's a lot of fun. You and I both killed a rifle deer this year.
Yep, I killed one. Well, I talked about it a couple weeks ago on the podcast, or a couple of podcasts ago at least. And I have decided that I actually really like rifle hunting.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get into this thing where you're like, I guess in my 20s, probably just this He-Man thing where it's like, oh, I love bow hunting and I want to be a bow hunter and this and that. And I still do, and I still will do it most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the feeling of having a rifle in your hand, you feel like a daggum military sniper. You're like, I can kill anything.
That's right. 100 yards and in, it's dead.
Dude, it's the weirdest thing. But, like, I really do feel... If I take a rifle, it literally doesn't matter where I go. Mm-hmm. I feel like I stand a chance. With a bow, I'm like, half my hunts, I'm like, this probably isn't going to happen, you know? But, like, with that rifle, it's different. And I kind of like that feeling, man.
After some of my South Texas experiences this past week, absolutely.
Yep.
I had 2 different bucks within 20 yards and couldn't get them killed on the ground. It's tough. We'll talk about more of that later. But, this deer, we haven't really talked about what he is too much. He's a deer we have on camera. And all these deer apparently are surprising as how big they are on the ground. Because we were thinking he was just like a ho-hum type buck when we saw him on camera. And when we saw him in person, like, he's a toad.
Dude, his frame is huge.
He's not a huge scorer or anything. I don't know what he'll score. He might push 130, maybe. But he's got really big brow tines, big bases. And like you said, he's got the Texas look where his frame goes up on his head.
It means his beams are long is what it means. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, he goes way up off his head, and he's pretty wide, too. Mm-hmm. And it just makes – it's kind of like my Kansas buck that I killed this year. Like, not just a crazy score. He's not going to Boone and Crockett or nothing. But, like for what he is, his frame is ridiculous, and it means long beams because they have to go high up off their head, out and around wide, you know. Mm-hmm. And it just – that's what it means. And so – he grew a lot of horn. One thing you talked about him being the boss buck, the first thing I thought when you said that was where he had been rubbing.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
He had a bunch of that green stuff on his antlers.
And he had just rubbed, like, there was a couple of spots on his bases that were white.
Oh, yeah.
And just smooth.
He had all those little bumpies were smoothed out real big on him. And he had, like, a couple broken tips on, but it was he didn't really lose a lot of inches or anything from anything. He's a 9-point. It's just really cool. I probably will get the deer shoulder mounted because it's just such an epic experience.
It was so cool.
It was just unreal. I mean, I killed a once in a lifetime buck in Kansas, which was just unbelievable because of what he was. But this whole thing is just everything just built to just one of the most awesome hunting experiences in my life.
It is awesome.
It was cool.
We lost our minds.
We did.
Dude.
It was kind of
so
unbelievable. And the trucks were right there.
It was
a little bit hard of a drag out because it was kind of like through a whole bunch of like shinery oak and stuff, but still it wasn't that bad. It was right up there the hill to the trucks.
Yeah.
And so,
dude. And I don't know. We'll post some more pictures. We posted a picture of it, but we'll post some more pictures on social when this podcast airs to kind of show you a few more. But like, it was just an epic night. It was one of those nights that I will never forget. Like, in my mind's eye, I can see the cloud detail, the river bluffs, and that buck sitting there on a sandbar, and it's just like it's just a scene that I won't forget.
It kind of reminds me of Nameless, not because the deer looks like him or anything, but it's just that's a hunt where I will never forget.
Yep.
You know, like, it's just so crisp.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things, man. It's really cool.
That's awesome.
It meant a lot to me, man. I mean, today's a hard day for me. Mm-hmm. You know, my granddad taught me a lot. It means a lot to me. And so, like, I don't know. He's had dementia, which I know you know something about that with some family stuff. And it's a hard way to see people go, you know.
Yeah.
But it's at the same time, like, because they're losing their memory, you kind of, like, cherish some memories.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of think about stuff some. So it's been an interesting time. I'm thankful and I think to end the podcast to think about some stuff. Now, y'all know we ain't afraid to preach, right? I'm not going to go into scripture too much or anything here, but I just want to talk about like what it means to be a man a little bit. And this is an important thing in a generation. And I'll say this, my post-kill interview, you're going to get preached at for sure. So just be ready for that. But in a generation that's struggling with that identity and knowing what it is, what a man even is sometimes, it's not bad to be a man. You know, we're created man and woman, right? And they were different in good ways. Mm-hmm. And that's how God made us. And part of, like, the biggest part of being a man is being a leader and doing the things it takes for your family and leading your family in a righteous way. And that's what my granddad did. And I think that one of the big things, even if you're not a believer, you don't have faith in your life. I wish you did. I hope you do. I hope you find that. But this is so funny and it's kind of cheesy. But you'll like it because you don't watch movies, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a line in the movie Gladiator that I'm going to kind of butcher because I can't remember it. But essentially, the actions we have now echo in eternity. And it really is true because, like, so many things about who I am are because of what my granddad and my dad did with me growing up.
Yeah, well, yes, because the things you do affect generations below you, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's
my granddad broke the generational curse. Mm-hmm. You know, his dad was an alcoholic, abusive man.
Mm-hmm.
Just completely different.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's what I've talked to Kaylee about it, you know, and just how important his life was to you and your dad, right? Mm-hmm. Your dad's a good man. And what that has meant for what your kids are going to experience. And it's the same thing. Actually, I talked about it in the beginning of this podcast, but, like, you know, and I said I wasn't going to go down this rabbit hole, but I guess I am now. But, like, I feel like when I said corruption, what I pretty much mean is sin. When mm-hmm. sin is allowed to just be there and fester, it builds upon itself. And the world essentially, it would seem at least to me that, it's more, almost more sinful every day, you know, and that's in small increments, but over time, over thousands of years, right? That's the case. Well, I believe also in the same way that the righteousness of certain people, that is imputed, that also, builds upon itself and can build mm-hmm. upon itself, you know, that true righteousness can. So, I think that, like, when you do things for the right reason, that reason would be, no matter who you are, to glorify God, then those things build upon themselves in blessings that you may or may not see, but that will essentially, you know, be bigger and bigger blessings. It's not necessarily that you're going to be richer or whatever. It's just that, like, you're going to have peace mm-hmm. and inner peace because you spend time trying to be righteous, trying to be what you should be as a man. And, you know, I'm saying this, I'm glad my wife just left because we would sit here and laugh at each other if I said this, but, like, I argued with her today, you know, and we had a little fight or whatever. It wasn't bad or anything, but we just argued, right? And we were arguing when you came in, you know, and we laughed about it.
I noticed it.
Yeah, yeah. And you said something, we laughed, you know, whatever. Yeah. But I'm not proud of that. That's something that I get better at. And better at over time, mm-hmm. but that I still do. But I guess I would just say that, like, the being a man, like I said, I'm glad my wife's not here because she'd be like, well, where were you at earlier today? But being mm-hmm. a man is serving it's that family that you were talking about. It's serving them. It's not mm-hmm. it's not like having a whiskey drink at night and
yeah,
just being a high testosterone kind of dude.
Winning your fantasy league. Yeah. That's not what makes you man.
No, not lifting. It's not lifting because it makes you strong and powerful and people, you know, your family thinks more of you. It's not that. It's about serving people. And it ultimately, if you look in, like, Ephesians 5, I guess it is, where it's dying for your wife.
Mm-hmm.
That's what in my case, in your case, and in a lot of people's cases, dying for your wife. It's what Jesus did for the church. And so I'm going to preach, KC, even though I probably shouldn't have, and people are not listening anymore, but that's how I feel. And it's literally, it's almost like a submission to God on behalf of your wife that shows her and leads her. And and then that therefore also leads other believers, you know. So it's dying to yourself.
That's it, man. And honestly, we can speak from the married man side of things, but as if you're a single guy listening, you still have some level of responsibility to family and just fellow men of like doing right. You know, like it's sounds real dumb, but just do right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a Phil Robinson take on things, right? Just do the right thing.
Common sense.
You know, that's it. And honestly, if you're, I can go off into marriage counseling real quick, apparently. That's kind of where I'm at these days. But it's like, no, I can't counsel you on your marriage, but telling people to get married. I tell Michael all the time.
Yeah, that's right. I got you.
Like, look for somebody who also thinks the same way on stuff. I mean, it's the second most important decision of your life is going to be who you marry. And it, I mean, you talk about things that echo for eternity. Your relationship with your spouse is going to be something that just is so impactful.
And here's the thing. Quit being, this is being a man, but be a man and have the conversations. They're not fun or easy conversations to have with a girlfriend that you don't really know that well. But you should clear that up soon in the relationship.
What do you want from this?
That's exactly right. What do you want from this? What are your
and guess what?
Are you wanting to get married?
Yeah.
Also, how do you feel about disciplining kids? How do you, you know, like there's a few things that you should try to line up on early on.
Did you get the jab? Like it's all stuff you should probably ask, you know?
Okay,
like,
Aaron Rodgers.
Like it's a thing. I kind of made a joke, but
no,
like,
it kind of is similar to
it
what
is.
I see what you're saying.
But there is like, dude, dating culture right now is so difficult, anyways, right? And there's so many things to navigate. I'm glad that I'm not dating right now. And
I promise you,
we're only 10 or 15 years removed from it, you know, but golly, it would be terrible. But if you just got to the point, man, she might be pretty. But if she don't like what you like, there's a whole bunch more pretty ones out there.
Yeah, you waste a lot less time.
You waste a lot of time.
And that's the thing. What I've been preaching to Michael is like, hey, you just got to be forward with this stuff, you know. And we're making Michael an example.
He didn't know he's going to get the personalized podcast.
Dude, for sure. No, but I mean, I deal with him all the time, and he's you know, a friend of mine, and we work together 330 days a year or whatever. So, you know, but like, I just think that that's important, and I think that that is a hard thing to do. So I'm not saying that it's easy, but you have, like, if you want to be a man, if you want to man up, have some masculinity. It, like I said, it ain't about doing certain things like, oh, I can drink a whiskey at night, you know, because that makes, you know, that's being a man. It's not that. It's having those tough conversations that the woman shouldn't have to bring up, you know, and that's where you come in, man. It's, you got to do some tough things, man. That's what it is. So
it's a good way to end it, man.
Yeah.
Remember, do what's right. Be a man. Be a leader. Take control of the situation, and remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meet Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th. The Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula, May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington, May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon, and May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.